Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to the press. It's our Wednesday show. It's Valentine's Day. Hope you're having a great Valentine's Day. Hopefully you got it off to a good start. You got a good present out there. You did the right things. Maybe you did a card. Maybe you got a romantic dinner tonight. Whatever it is, hopefully it's a good one for you. And if you don't have a Valentine, hopefully you're just having a great Wednesday. And you're having a fun day. Today we are going to talk a little bit about the Champions Tour event, the Chubb Classic, because I did promise we would talk about that, however, briefly. And then I want to spend pretty much the entire episode talking about the philosophy behind analyzing players in golf tournaments, trying to kind of put some stuff out there that I want to talk about because I've noticed it in the golf betting community over time. And I feel like there's a misunderstanding around what statistics really matter and can have an influence. Also, what to look for when you are betting on players. And then trying to analyze golf courses. I want to kind of cover all of that in our time together today. So let's start with first, before we get into that, the Chubb Classic on the PGA Tour Champions. It is their event in the Naples area. It's the only other tournament of the week. There's nothing else out there other than the PGA Tour event. There's no LPGA, no DP World Tour. They're in Kenya next week. There is an Asian Tour event coming up, but something that you can bet on in a book in this country is, you know, that this is it. These two events this week. So typically you would go and bet Bernhard Langer here because he's a 5-time winner of this event. Well, he ruptured his Achilles, so he's not playing. So instead you have Steve Stricker, Steve Alker, Patrick Harrington. Those are your three favorites. Plus 330, plus 450, and plus 500. If I were you, I would just bet those three guys and call it a day. And I've talked about this before about betting the champions. More often than not, this is kind of an arbitrage kind of play. This is a way where you can basically identify three or four players depending on the odds you get that week. You bet those players exclusively and maybe one other that you might have a hunch you could get to the finish line and win. And then you just roll with it. And if you one of those three guys gets there, you get a very small piece of profit. If they don't get there, obviously you lose. But maybe your wild card gets there. So I would look at these three guys, Alker, Stricker, and Harrington, because they are the best players on the circuit right now, and it's frankly not even close. Stricker and Alker are more likely to win than anybody, I think. Jerry Kelly has played well in courses like this in the past. Ernie Els as well. They're both 14-1. I think they're worth a consideration. But then beyond that, you've got like Justin Leonard, who doesn't play well on the circuit, at 35-1. You've got Fred Couples, who's getting up there in years, 50-1. You're going down the board pretty quickly to players that, I mean, maybe you think about like I like Steve Flesch. He wins it kind of out of nowhere. He's 150-1. Maybe a Ken Tanigawa, 150-1. Maybe a Tim O'Neill, who I like a lot, had a really nice year last year. Maybe 180-1. Maybe you pick one of those guys just in case something crazy happens. But really, when you're betting this tour for the last 3 or 4 years, your play is to look at the top 3 or 4 players if you have them all in the event, and they play most of them. You bet them, basically 3 or 4 of them, and if it works out, you make a little bit of money. Is that fun and sexy? No. So if you're interested in fun and sexy, do not bet the champions unless you just throw a crazy dart, and maybe you get lucky once in a season, and it might pay for all your bets. Otherwise, this is, I think, the best way to play the champions. So I just wanted to kind of get that out there, that system of thinking about the Champions Tour. You really can't do it on any other tour. You can't do it on the Korn Ferry. It's too random. Definitely can't do it on the DP World Tour. Well, so far this year, you probably could have. But even then, on the DP World Tour, you're I mean, your favorites are like 5 or 7.5 to 1. So you get a little bit more juice out of trying to play the favorites, but I think you're going to see a reversal of the trends between the two tours, between the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour over time, where so far it's been mostly favorites on the DP World Tour winning. That's going to kind of veer more toward, and we've started to see it already, kind of spin back toward less likely champions and some top-tier winners, and you've had the exact opposite on the PGA Tour. Nothing but long shots. Eventually, that's going to swing back the other way, I think, I hope, and you get some better players who win. I mean, from a juice perspective, triple-digit guys winning is a lot of fun, but it's obviously much harder to predict. Of the winners that we've had so far this season, you know, we mentioned Chris Kirk, and we mentioned Nick Taylor. Everybody else, I did not have on the bingo card. Almost had Keegan Bradley at Sony, but he obviously didn't win. 400-1 Grayson Murray did. So those things are fun, and you know that's great. But eventually, I think it'll swing back the other way. All right, enough Champions Tour. Let's kind of talk a little bit about philosophy of betting. And the reason I wanted to do this show, as I mentioned, I think, but to kind of make it clear, you know, I've been doing this podcast for a while, but more importantly, I've been talking about fantasy golf and golf betting for, it feels like a decade. I mean, I've been doing it a long time, and Make Picks, and we've been talking about betting odds even before it was legal in this country, but also for our European friends where it was legal, and Australian friends. And in recent years, there's obviously been a proliferation of golf betting content, and I think that in general has been a good thing. That has helped more people get exposure to the fun that I think is golf betting when you do it responsibly, and that you can think about approaching golf tournaments in so many different ways. You know, I like the outright world. I like pre-tournament outrights, the occasional live outright. There's some people who love matchups. That is not my specialty, but I do like the occasional matchup. But we don't talk about that a lot on this show. Some people love derivative bets, 5s, 10s, 20s, and 30s, and 40s. People love that stuff. Make, miss, cut. People love that kind of thing. It is a very vast world in which you can operate and have fun and maybe make a little bit of money. But I also think there has been a proliferation of a misunderstanding about golf tournaments, a misunderstanding of how to evaluate golfers, how to evaluate golf courses, and what really matters in determining a winner, while also recognizing there's a reason the odds on golf week to week are crazy compared to other sports that seem much more predictable, even though they're not always very predictable, but they are much more predictable. And the reason for that is because the difference between, let's say this week, the best player in the field and the 70th best player in the field in terms of talent, let's say the second best or third best, because the top players are head and shoulders above the others. But let's say 65 of the 70 players in the field are all pretty clustered closely in terms of talent. Accomplishments, no, not necessarily, but of what they are capable of doing is pretty close. And even the top five best players, if they don't have their best week, they get right lumped into that 65 right away, and you've got a wide open golf tournament. And then it comes down to executing the shots, things going your way. You need the right draw, you need the right bounces, you need the right landing points, you need the right wind. There's a lot of things that happen in a golf tournament that are completely out of your control, my control, the player's control, the field's control, the tour's control, that you cannot account for. You just cannot account for with data. And so when I'm thinking about betting golf tournaments, I'm trying to think about trying to make the best guess possible. And if I'm going to guess based on the data that I have, then I'm going to try to focus on the outright market because I know the results are quite variable from one round to the next, much less one tournament to the next. And I want a better payoff for taking that guess. But I understand people who would much prefer to take their guess in a one-on-one opportunity or a one-on-two or one-on-four opportunity when you bet matchups or you bet groups, those types of things. I understand that. Completely. That's not where my interest lies, but I get it. But then you're subjecting yourself by playing one-on-one or one-on-two to the same kind of variability you just have a slightly more focused opponent. But from one 18-hole set to the next, anything can happen. So when I'm trying to evaluate players for a tournament, and it doesn't matter the kind of bet that I'm trying to make, I start with a long-term perspective. Because if you play better in the long haul, you are a better player. Not if you're playing now. Well, that can matter. But I want to start with players that are playing well over the longer haul. Because you've established a baseline that you are a good player. You beat fields consistently. You give yourself a chance. Scottie Scheffler is obviously the poster child for that now. He beats a lot of fields. He beats a lot of players in every field. He also doesn't win that frequently for a guy who is that much better than everybody else. Because winning is hard. Winning is extremely hard at really any level of professional golf. But it's extremely hard. And the best indicator you can have that someone's going to win is that they're better than everyone else consistently. But that's not the only indicator. So that's why I start my model looking at 1 and 2 year windows. I want to know how well you've played over the last rolling 52 weeks, the last rolling 104 weeks. And then that will be my baseline from which I evaluate you. Of course, you have exceptions, right? Every year at the start of the year, you get an influx of rookies. You get an influx of graduates from the Korn Ferry Tour. Now you get graduates from the DP World Tour. You have Q School back. So you have anywhere from 40 to 50 players who don't have a lot of recent tour experience. So you have to rely on them in the short term because the comparison, let's say we're talking about the Korn Ferry Tour grads. The setup style, the golf course style, the game style on the Korn Ferry Tour is frankly completely different than the PGA Tour. And I've had this conversation with multiple players from the Korn Ferry Tour that have gone on to the PGA Tour. The style of play to get to the PGA Tour is much more, it's just easier. You can bang it where you want. The rough isn't as deep. The greens are generally pretty good shape. The pins aren't as hard. They are hard, but they're not as hard. Scoring is the key. Bang it as hard as you can. Hit it again. Hit it close. Make putts. There's not a lot of defensive golf. At the PGA Tour level, that changes. So trying to evaluate a player who played well last year on the Korn Ferry Tour may not go very far for you in trying to determine how well they're going to play out of the gate on the PGA Tour, especially if they've never had a card before, they've never seen courses and things like that. Same is true on the DP World Tour. I think the standard is pretty similar to the Korn Ferry Tour. A little bit better, but pretty similar idea. If you're graduating from the DP World Tour, you're seeing a different style of architecture. You're seeing different quality of conditioning. You're seeing different conditions. Everything is different. So trying to evaluate a player solely based on what they did the year prior is hard to do. So those are where you start to think about short-term modeling. But we got to start with long-term modeling, long-term thinking. I think a lot of folks in this space, in the golf betting space, spend too much time focusing on trying to find statistics that matter for a certain golf course every week. And I think that is a misguided exercise for a couple of different reasons. The first, we don't have a huge sample size for each player on each golf course. Every year they're going to play 4 rounds of that golf course at most. And then they're going to come back the next year and play 4 more rounds on that golf course. I know how I play my home club because I play it 20 or 30 times a year. So I've played it over 11 years, 250 to 300 times. I know what I'm going to do there. It's not that I have a big data set, right? 4 rounds is not a big data set. Now, you have 70 or 120 or 132, 144, 156 players playing 2 to 4 rounds each. Over time, you kind of build an idea of what a golf course looks like, how it plays. The problem with trying to model a golf course is players are different, right? Every player is different. Scottie Scheffler achieves what he does with an incredible distance off the tee, superior ball striking, and mediocre on a good day putting. That's a different viewpoint than let's say, a Justin Thomas, who drives the ball pretty far, is a pretty good iron player, and is a pretty good putter, right? That's a different style. They also don't hit the ball exactly the same, so they have different strategies. They see what they prefer to do. Every player prefers a different style of shot. Yes, the cut is fairly prevalent in golf now, but there's some players who prefer a draw. Some players prefer to hit a high ball or a low ball. Some players come in with their wedge play. They come in a little bit steep and they pop it up in the air. Some come in a little bit flat. They like to bump it in. So the kind of try to aggregate that with a statistic. Oh, birdies gained, which is a made up thing that doesn't really matter. Or, I don't know, shots from inside 75 yards. That typically doesn't matter either. Like, if you're trying to pick out one particular thing that happens on a golf course, there is a very good chance that a player who contends that week doesn't do that thing especially well, or they do it well that week because of the sample size situation. So trying to get super specific about statistics that matter to a golf course, I think is a fool's errand. Generally speaking, the things that most matter on a golf course are being a longer hitter, the longer you are, the better, and being a good iron player. If you have a good approach game, and that is a consistent approach game, you're going to put yourself in position to win more often than not. Those are the things that matter the most. Strokes gained, tee to green matter the most. That's the thing that makes you consistent and good, make you a lot of money. Putting is the variable, right? Putting is not easy. Putting is the most variable statistic in terms of strokes gained week to week. You could probably argue short game, you know, strokes gained around the green is variable because it depends on the golf course, depends on how big the greens are, depends on where you miss, depends on where the pins are, all kinds of different things. That's another thing you can't account for. You don't know where the pins are before the tournament. So, I mean, you can know about the Masters, but sometimes the pins are in positions that favor certain players. There is some truth to the old conspiracy theory about Patrick Reed always getting fade pins when he's a draw player or whatever it was. You know, he didn't like draw pins, right? Or fade pins or whatever it was. Well, if you don't like the pins, it's harder to hit comfortable shots. So you don't know that ahead of time. And each player has a different comfort level, right? So there's that piece of it. Generally speaking, again, you want to look for players that are driving the ball well in terms of strokes gained. You're looking for players that are hitting good iron shots. They're hitting they don't have to hit tons of greens. I mean, you want them to hit it on the green, but you want to have better proximity. You want to gain strokes on the approach. That may turn out to work against you if you're not a good putter, because you lose strokes putting almost to the opposite. You know, it kind of works out, kind of cancels out your good approach play if you don't convert. And that's just kind of how golf is. You have to convert the good ones, and you have to get lucky on some of the mediocre ones to be able to score well. Scottie Scheffler is, again, the perfect poster child for that, where he is a tremendous tee to green player, but he makes a lot of putts, but he also isn't the best putter, so he misses a lot of good opportunities. And the psyche of that matters to him or to any golfer. If you put a lot of opportunities close and you can't take advantage of them, then you start to press. Well, we don't have strokes gained pressing. I can't tell you what they're going to do when their mindset is, I've got to make this birdie now because I've choked away three in a row. That stuff you can't figure out, you can't quantify, you can't control. So again, I think in terms of getting super myopic about what statistics matter to a certain player on a golf course, I don't think that's true. I don't think that's a good assessment or a good use of your time. What I would rather you try to think about, if you're going to try to think about that, is try to understand the demands of a golf course. Now, I try to do that through this notion of course fit. What's the pie chart look like in terms of high-performing players and how they gain strokes on a golf course relative to their field? Is it more putting reliant? Is it more driving reliant? Is it more approach reliant? What about short game? Short game is a big deal this week, bigger deal this week at Riviera than pretty much any course on the PGA Tour. Putting less so because it's on Poa grass, so you have to understand grasses. Poa grass gets bumpy. It can be fast. It can be hard to read. It grows during the day. It's really frustrating. Bermuda can be the same way, though, because Bermuda grows throughout the course of the day and often can grow faster than Bermuda. or excuse me, than Poa. It maybe doesn't get as bumpy, but it's also grainy. And so you have to understand kind of how grain works. And there's some players who are much more comfortable reading grain and break and speed than someone who would prefer putting on bent grass or rye grass that doesn't have those things, or Poa that gets a little bumpy and you kind of have to take a little break out of it because it's the speed's a little different. Those things you kind of have to understand. But if you're thinking about how to try to fit a player to a course, the difference between the demands of the median, like 25 courses on the PGA Tour, is not that different. It's somewhere in the area of one-third to two-thirds, plus or minus a couple percentage points each way. So putting's about one-third of the equation. Tee to green is about two-thirds of the equation. So if you think about every hole, drive, approach, putt, take your par threes and par fives, because then you could have drive, approach, putt, or drive, approach, chip, putt. Par threes, you have drive, putt, right? It all kind of averages out, but that all kind of makes sense. It's one third of each, but the variables skill most controlled are the first two thirds, are the drive and the approach. The more variables, the third part. So if you're trying to identify players who gain strokes, more strokes putting relative to the field, then they're more variable. They're less reliable. That doesn't mean they can't win, just makes them less reliable. That's how you have to think about a player. If you gain so much of your strokes putting, that's cool, but that means you're probably not playing as well tee to green, right? Because then you would just be head and shoulders above everybody else. If you did everything well, you would be head and shoulders above everybody else and win all the time. That's what made Tiger so amazing. So that's not going to be many golfers. So if you're trying to find course fits, simplify that approach. Make it a little bit easier for yourself. Don't go down the rabbit hole of approaches from 150 to 175 yards matter. Well, if your golfer is longer, no, they don't. Not really. And if your golfer is shorter, they definitely don't, because they're probably hitting from 195. And you can't really aggregate that data en masse. If you can, and someday you probably will with AI, you probably could if you made a model about it. But and had all the data. But you can't really do that very well right now. Also, to try to understand golf courses, I think, is important. Golf courses do matter to a degree. But what fits a player's eye is harder to quantify with actual statistics, right? I'll give you the example of 15 at Riviera this week. Victor Hovland's going to be the only dude in the field who plays up 17 and tries to get to 15 green from 17. Because he doesn't want to put his drive in the fairway bunker on the right that makes it very difficult to reach the green. Well, there are a lot of players who like that tee shot the standard way because they can hit it short enough with a cut and hit the fairway. They can draw it over the bunker if they're a longer player, or you know, they have a comfort with that shot. They have a way to play it. Does that fit Hovland's eye? No, but that's one of 13 tee shots. Does that bother him? Does that make him not like the golf course? Not necessarily, but there are going to be holes he doesn't like. There are going to be shots he doesn't like on the golf course. You can't, again, kind of have to think about the bigger set of results. Do the players gain strokes on the golf course against the field, and do they play well in turn? Do they finish well? That's your indicator of whether they're a course fit more than anything else. What they've gained and where they finish. Then you have a better idea whether to like them. So that's the second thing I look at in any modeling that I do. Outside of my model, I want to know how well they play on the golf course that week. And if they don't have a lot of experience, then not that you throw that out entirely, then you try to start thinking about the course fit a little bit with a grain of salt that may help inform you of what's going on that golf course or what could happen. But the things you can't account for are the comfort the players have with green sizes, pin locations, green speeds that might be variable, certain types of grass, slopes that they've never seen, stuff like that. You can't quantify that. So again, that's why you're getting these better prices, that you just can't control those types of things. You can't know them from someone who's played a golf course for 1 year or 2 years or even 3 years. I don't think you can do that. You build that profile over time. But the last 5 years is probably the best window you have, and after that maybe the golf course has been changed or a player has changed. Their swing is different, their approach is different, their schedule is different, their life's different. 5 years is probably your best window to look at a player, not a 10-year window. Two's too short, 10's too long. Somewhere in the middle, you make your decision, I suppose. So that's what I want to look at next. And then I also want to look at current form for a couple of different reasons. One, we talked about the guys that you don't know. You don't have enough of a battery of events on the PGA Tour to fully evaluate them from a 1 to 2 year perspective. So I want to know about them in the short term. Are they playing well now? Have they been playing well? Are they adjusting? I want to know how many weeks in a row they've played, because more often than not, players who play after like the third week of playing in a row, their performance tends to dip significantly, substantially. That's most players. The Eric Coles of the world are freaks who can just play and play and play and play and play and play well. There are not many of them. So if you're looking at a player who's on a back-to-back-to-back, this is probably the last week you can look at them. And even then, I would be a little fishy about it. If they're a player who just took a week off or 2 weeks off and they're rested and ready and they like the golf course and they've been playing well otherwise, they may come out rusty. Yeah, sure. But I would like them more than a player who's played 4 or 5 weeks in a row. So you need to kind of know that about a player's schedule. You need to know how they're playing leading into it and what kind of rest they've had. Rest does matter. It's a grind out there. Going and playing a tour event is a grind. You get there early. You stay late. It's a long day. Every day is a long day. It's a very tiring experience. So you need to kind of know that about a player. Their current schedule, I think, means a whole heck of a lot. And what they've done in their current schedule. Sometimes, take an example. So when we go from the West Coast here, we'll have Mexico in between. You go to Florida. Those are different golf courses, different demands, very different demands. In some Florida golf courses that tend to be tighter. Obviously, you go to Bermuda. Wind can be a different kind of factor. You're playing at sea level typically. You lose a little bit of distance. You know, those types of things kind of factor into what you're thinking about. But again, you can't quantify those quite enough with data that we have, at least without a whole lot of AI involved, to spit out a ranking for you, a power ranking for you that's going to appropriately account for that minute difference. So everything I've said here is, let's take a bigger set of data. Let's take a longer term view on golf betting and try to plug that in. Something I wanted to run and I didn't get to run because I'm still figuring out the MySQL query to do this correctly with my database. But I wanted to run a query of looking at winners of the PGA Tour in the last 10 years and what they did in the start prior. Because I think that would be somewhat illuminating. But the reality is, it's a wide variety of things. You've had guys who have missed 10 cuts in a row and went out of nowhere. You've had guys who've won 3 in a row. You've had guys who were second last week and won the next week. You've had guys who were 10th and then first. The distribution is wide enough that I don't think that really tells you everything you need to know. Current form tells you something, right? If you're playing well now and you like the golf course and you've been playing well over time, man, that's hard not to bet. That's an easy thing to like. But very rarely is that the case. Or very rarely do you get good pricing on those guys. That's a Scottie Scheffler. That's a Rory McIlroy. That's a John Rahm. That's a name your guy. But when those guys are having Victor Hovland, when those guys are having that run, their prices stink because they are doing those three things. You're getting a good price on a player if they're doing one or two of those things. That's your best chance. And you have to have a conviction about it. Kurt Kitayama this week, playing well, plays well against tough fields. And that's something that also matters to me. And I did not talk about that quite enough in my modeling. But I care about the quality of competition that you're playing against. Gaining strokes is cool. But if you're playing golf courses that are easy, statistically speaking, in terms of making it easy to get closer to the pin, if you are playing against weak competition, I'm going to discount the value of your strokes gained. It all kind of zeroes out the component pieces, the putting, off the tee, approach and around the green. All that equals what you gain over the strokes gained over the course of the week. They've figured that out. But if you're playing easier golf courses, I don't really care as much about the strokes that you've gained. If you're playing easier players to beat, I don't care about the strokes you've gained as much. So that's why we came up with quality strokes gained. I want to multiply the strokes that you've gained against the quality of your competition relative to the official World Golf Ranking points assignment for that week. So if you're playing a major and it's 100 points, then I'm going to multiply it by 2. If you're playing a field where you get 30 world ranking points to first, then I'm going to multiply that by 0.6. They're not the same. They aren't the same. And you can't quantify them as the same. It doesn't make sense. So you have to consider those types of things as well. And there are differences for players who play well on hard golf courses and players who play well on easy golf courses. And that's actually a tool we should come out with, and I will try to come out with shortly, is players who gain the most strokes on tougher scoring average places and easier scoring average places. So we'll talk about that as well. All that to say, again, everything I've talked about here that I wanted to lay out is that you should take a longer-term, bigger-picture perspective as much as you can about evaluating players. You get a little bit more specific when you don't have quality data, or you're looking for some kind of confirmation, or you need just a little extra piece of something that you can't get from looking at a longer-term view. Look at last 50 events. Look at the last 100 events. Last 10 events helps if you're trying to identify a player who's playing their way into form, playing their way out of a longer-term trend, because it will take 10 events to figure that out. It won't take 2 or 3. It'll take a longer-term view. So if you see a player who's played hot the last 2 events, Adam Scott's my example this week. I know he's won this event twice, T20, T8. I am willing to take that price on him, knowing that he's played well at this golf course, is capable of playing well in the long haul, and is playing well currently. That's why that guy got bet up real quick, because that was probably a misprice. Versus someone like Emiliano Grillo, who is playing well, won last year, but does not win often, and is above average, but pretty mediocre. You're still getting a good price on him, because people don't associate that with someone you must bet. So, the longer-term view, I think, is very instructive. Then you get into course, shorter-term view, and then your kind of what-ifs or course fit, similar style courses, correlated courses, those types of things. But the more mired you get into specific pieces of performance and specific pieces of the weeds outside of those main categories of strokes gained, I think you're doing yourself quite a disservice, and you're spending too much time, frankly, for the payout that you're going to get, because golf's pretty darn random at the end of the day. And if you get a guess right, if you analyze it and you get it right, hey, good for you. But more often than not, you're not going to before the tournament. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Spent long enough time droning on about this. Hopefully that was instructive and helpful, and I would really appreciate some feedback on that. I do want to talk about live betting a little bit on a separate show. We'll talk about that maybe next week as well. We're going to try to do more of these kind of betting philosophy shows to get out there into the universe how I think about this stuff, as opposed to just saying, oh, they're playing well, or oh, they rank high in the model, or their odds are bad, or trying to give you reasons why I do the things I do and the way I think about things the way I do. Because I've played enough high-level golf, I've played with enough high-level golfers, and I've seen enough high-level golf to understand that the myopia with which the betting community sometimes thinks about golf tournaments is not the reality of the situation. And how players compete doesn't necessarily line up with how they think about tournaments. So it's better to just think about each player individually with as many easy comparisons as possible, and then you take your guesses from there. All right, that's going to do it for us this week on the show. I appreciate it. We'll be back next week. We've got plenty to talk about. We'll have a pretty decent-sized slate. The LPGA is back. They're starting their Asian swing next week. We do have the Asian Tour this week. You can't really bet that here. We'll get some stuff starting to come back. So we'll have multiple event weeks coming. We'll have the Kenya Open on the DP World Tour as well. You can get a hold of me, Ryan, @thegolfnewsnet.com. Check me out on Twitter, Threads, Instagram, and Blue Sky @RyanBalanji. I am on YouTube and Facebook at Ryan Balanji Golf. Join Golf News Net for $99. Keep saying $99. It's $40 a year now. I'm so sorry about that. It is $40 a year at GolfNewsNet.com. We will be back next week with more. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time on The Press. Good luck with your bets this week.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.